Scripture this morning is Luke 2, 41 through 52. Now every year his parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up as usual for the festival. When the festival was ended and they started to return, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. But his parents did not know it. Assuming that he was in the group of travelers, they went a day's journey. Then they started to look for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem to search for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Child, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety." He said to them, "Why were you searching for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he said to them. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was obedient to them. His mother treasured all these things in her heart, and Jesus increased in wisdom and in years and in divine and human favor.
In the Gospel of Mark, we meet Jesus for the first time at the River Jordan when John prepares to baptize him. In the Gospel of John, we meet him there as well. This marks the beginning of Jesus' ministry, but of course we know this isn't our first encounter with him. Luke and Matthew introduce us to him at his birth. Now, we spent 4 weeks preparing for Jesus to be born. We gathered with the angels in Bethlehem to witness his entrance into our world. We journeyed with the wise ones following the sparkle of a star. We laid gifts at his infant feet. We saw him in the divine light. We recognized Emmanuel is now with us. And then he went dark. Is that even possible? I mean, how is it that this bright light can come into the world and then suddenly darkness? What happened? Did the star just disappear? Is it not following him anymore? Now that the wise men got there, the star disappeared too? Nobody else paid attention ever again? Don't you ever wonder what happened after the wise men arrived? They left, they took their gifts, went off into a different direction so as to avoid running into Herod again. Joseph has a dream, and the angel tells him to get his family out of Israel because Herod was so angry and fixing to kill all the babies. So they go to Egypt. They stay there until Herod dies, and in a dream, Joseph is warned not to go back to Judea, so they head to Galilee, and they make Nazareth their home. And for Matthew, that's all we get for 30 years. This miraculous birth, angels showing up in dreams, stars rising in the sky, kings traversing far and wide with gifts on bended knee, and then nothing. Nothing happened? For 30 years, nothing happened? At least Luke has the decency to throw us a bone. Really? I mean, we get a little check-in partway through just to see how our adolescent Jesus is doing. It's only right to give us a window into his life because we've been so invested in his birth. The whole world awaits his coming, but Matthew makes us wait another 30 years before we hear even a peep about Emmanuel, who has come to save our world. If it wasn't for Luke, we'd get nothing. Now, the writer of Luke knows that we are curious about that baby turned boy. So he figures, well, every Jewish boy has a bar mitzvah. And in this case, instead of learning from the elders and priests, our Jesus takes it up a notch and teaches them in the temple. I think that's what we're hoping for, something like this. We're looking for some sort of insight into who this guy was. We expect Jesus to be a child prodigy. So it's good to hear about his progress. But Matthew, I just can never get over us. Matthew takes us from the family's exodus out of Egypt straight to the Jordan. In fact, if we were following the lectionary, it would be 1 week the birth, the next week the star, and the next week the baptism. Can't you believe that? I mean, placing the kings in our manger and a man and poof, and we're done and we're on to Lent. Doesn't it make you wonder what happened? What happened between those chapters? What happened in Jesus, the lost years? Did Jesus live under a rock? I don't think so, although many people have said Nazareth was like a rock out there. Nobody came from Nazareth. But I don't think he went from baby to baptism without living and growing, exploring, being. I often wonder, what was life like for this young Jesus before he walked knee-deep into the Jordan? Now, I've told you this before, that one of my favorite TV shows as a kid, I think they still run it at Nick at Night, was, of course, Bewitched. You remember that show, don't you? How could you not? There was this beautiful witch, Samantha, and she was married to this clumsy, dim-witted, mortal husband, Darren, you remember? After a few seasons, they had Tabitha, their daughter, and she was born with one mortal parent and one magical parent, so they didn't know what was going to happen to her, if she would be a witch or she'd just be a normal kid. But early on in their infancy, they could tell that their baby was definitely a witch. She had magical powers, but she didn't really know what to do with them. However, it was clear the power was present. As the show went on, little Tabitha grew into a child. Her powers became more and more evident. Everyone can remember the magic that Samantha could conjure up with a simple twitch of her nose. She had the vacuum running in one room and the stove cooking up dinner. She could do everything you could ever want in one moment while at the same time figuring out the solution to Darren's problems with Mr. Tate at work, all while mixing cocktails at the same time. But Tabitha couldn't quite wriggle her nose in the same way. She needed to hone her skills. Just like any child who finds herself stuck in a moment where she doesn't get her way and does whatever she can to get what she wants, little Tabitha would do the same. She'd put her finger on her nose and wiggle it, and the magic would just let loose. But it didn't always work right. Often it was incredibly selfish. But what can you expect? She was just a child. Isn't that what every child would do if he or she had magical powers? I like to think about Tabitha when I think about Jesus. And I wonder what happened between those chapters. There he lay, this baby surrounded by the magi, smuggled into Egypt, creeped back to Nazareth, and then suddenly a man. But there must have been some growing up that happened in between. What happened to that baby or that boy, that teenager, that young, handsome man in his 20s? What happened in those lost years? I don't really know, but I like to think that he spent those first 3 decades wrinkling his nose and figuring out what it means to try on Jesus, the Son of God. And as it turns out, Luke and I are not the only ones who wondered about what happened during those lost years. Did you know, some of you might remember, that there are actually other gospels, other narratives that emerged in antiquity as people began to wonder what happened after the baby was born in Bethlehem and before the Baptist dunked him in the River Jordan? Enter the infancy gospels. There actually are quite a few. They are fascinating, often entertaining. It's where we get the information that we think we know, but we don't know why we know it. We call it midrash. They're stories about the stories, or stories behind the stories. So you might pick up one of the books and read about Joseph the carpenter, learn all about Jesus' father. Or you can prove that Mary was definitely a virgin by reading the Gospel of James, where the midwife actually checks for the hymen to ascertain that, yes, indeed, she was a virgin. Because, of course, it remained there after birth. Ouch. Turns out, after reading these Gospels, we learn that Mary had a unique birth herself to parents. Do anybody remember the parents' names? I knew I could count on a Catholic. Thank you. I was looking over here to Charlene. Anne and Joachim, but how do you know? It's not scriptural. But the names, the occupations, the stories managed to circulate through early Christianity, and remnants still exist today. So those of us who are looking for more than what Luke doles out can turn to the infancy gospel of Thomas. In Greek, we call it the Proto-Evangelion. That means not exactly the Evangelion, which is the gospel, but the Proto-Evangelion is translated into English as infancy. So it's before. And if you remember, I'll just point out this, that the Gospel of Thomas is actually a sayings gospel. It has all of Jesus' sayings and words without any narratives. We've studied that before, and I'm sure we'll study it again. But this is a story that comes before the gospel, Proto-Evangelion. It's like a prequel. And it's a lot like Star Wars in the fact that the prequels were produced after the real thing. And they're completely incomparable. But they do answer some questions that we might have. They make the story fuller. They attempt to answer all of these questions that are ruminating in our minds about who this baby, child, adolescent Jesus was. So, was Jesus anything like Tabitha? Yep. You might remember this, that in the infancy Gospel of Thomas, chapter 1 tells us a story about when Jesus was 5 years old. He was playing in this narrow part of a rushing stream and gathering the flowing waters into the ponds. Immediately, those ponds were made clean, and he ordered all this with a single word, says the gospel. Afterwards, he made clay and molded 12 sparrows from it. And it makes note that this was on the Sabbath that he did these things. But also there were other children playing with him, so they were all playing. Then a certain Jew saw what Jesus was doing while playing on the Sabbath and immediately departed to report to Jesus' father, Joseph, saying, "Look, your child is in the stream," and he took clay and he formed 12 birds and profaned on the Sabbath. So, of course, Joseph was so embarrassed, he went straight to his kid and said, "Why are you doing these things that are not permitted on the Sabbath?" Jesus, however, clapped his hands and shouted to the sparrows, "Depart, fly, and remember me now that you are alive." And the sparrows took off, flying and shrieking as they left. Now, the story says that the Jews saw this and they were amazed, and they went to their leaders to figure out what it was that Jesus did. This is one of these first early reports about what was happening to our young Jesus, making dirty water pure, creating and imbuing life on the Sabbath. But he was a child, so, as children often do, he acted out a little bit. So in the third chapter, we hear another story about Jesus playing with a boy. The son of Annas, the scribe, was there with Jesus. He took a branch from a willow tree, and he dispersed the very waters which Jesus had gathered. When Jesus saw what had happened, he became angry and said to him, "You godless, brainless moron, what did the ponds and waters do to you? Watch this now. You are going to dry up like a tree, and you will never produce leaves or roots or fruit." And immediately, this comes right from this gospel. Immediately, this child withered up completely. Then Jesus departed and returned to Joseph's house. The parents of the one who had been withered up, however, wailed for their young child as they took his remains away. They went to Joseph and accused him, "You are responsible for the child that did this." It's scary, huh? It's pretty crazy. You don't want to cross the path of a kid with power. But just like that little witch Tabitha, who was still growing into her miracle and magical powers, I suppose hers were magical, so was the little Jesus portrayed, the God who was growing into his powers. The story portrays Jesus as this God with these superhuman powers, but it also simultaneously displays the humanity of Jesus. He's a kid. He's figuring out what to do with all these incredible powers and this awesome responsibility. And in this case, he uses it in entirely the wrong way. But imagine what he must have had to go through. He probably had so many questions. He likely laid awake at night wondering, why me? What am I supposed to do with all this power? I guess it was pretty cool. He could use it for how he wanted it if the infancy gospel of Thomas describes it any way near how it must have been. But you can also see that Jesus was not very well liked. Every time he had a temper tantrum, typical of any growing child, somebody ended up dead. Totally atypical of any growing child. As you can imagine, he didn't have a whole lot of friends after that. Everybody was afraid of him. Can you imagine how that must have felt? I'm sure he asked himself over and over again, why am I so different from everyone? Now, I want to be clear that I'm not inclined to believe that any of this was historical, that Jesus ever had any sort of a childhood like the infancy gospels report. But it answers some of those questions I have. I'm craving to know what happened to Jesus during those lost years. Superpowers or no superpowers, Jesus probably did spend nights awake asking these questions of God about who he was and what he was supposed to do, why he was called to do it. I bet that those lost years were spent discerning his life, growing up, making mistakes, learning from those mistakes, and then realizing that he had a choice. He could have followed along the path that society had laid out for him. He could have become a carpenter like his father. And maybe he did. We don't entirely know. If he were anything like the boy that was described in the infancy gospel of Thomas, he could have gone on to be like a Lex Luthor, worse, a Hitler. But somewhere in those lost years, after the Magi, before the Baptist, Jesus did some soul searching, and Jesus did some growing up. I really like the infancy gospels because they portray a real kid minus the magical powers. A bratty kid, one who thinks he knows it all. You hear that sarcasm that even Luke has in his gospel. A real headache for his parents. Just like every other kid I've ever met at one time or another. He's the real thing. So even Luke, who does his best to show off Jesus as a boy genius who schools all the religious elite, teaching them directly from the scroll, even Luke portrays Jesus as at least a little bit mischievous. And like most preteens, a total know-it-all. But we also see he's in process. A boy becoming a man who will change the world. I love to think about Jesus this way, in process. I guess I have a hard time thinking only of the baby away in the manger, no crying he makes. I can't relate to Jesus that way. I've never met a baby who doesn't cry. The most precious of babies cries, shrieks. The most well-behaved two-year-olds throws a tantrum. I know. The most driven adolescents annoys the heck out of their parents. Because nobody's perfect. I can't relate to perfect. I can relate to trying to be perfect. I can relate to cursing myself for failing to do this right thing or that thing or screwing this up. But I cannot relate to perfect. I like a Jesus who throws a tantrum every once in a while. But even more, I like a Jesus who learns to think twice about it. Like every child who ever lived into adulthood, Jesus grew up. He made good on his childish and adolescent antics. He lived into the identity predicted in Isaiah, that he would faithfully bring forth justice. He would become a light to the nations, to open the eyes that are blind, to bring out from the prison those who sit in darkness. For quite some time, I've been really struggling in the middle of what feels like an overwhelming darkness. But in light of yesterday's march around the country and here in our own backyard, I've been thinking a lot about what it means to be in process. I'm not totally comfortable in the middle of it all. I feel sort of lost between the chapters sometimes. I'm fearful that we're going to be stuck in the dark years. But then I get these glimmers of hope, these windows into what it's going to be like. The same way Luke and even the infancy gospels offer us a hope. We're in process. We're growing into our best selves. Sometimes we show it off, but sometimes we need a little pushing and pulling to get there. But we're on the way. There are times when we as a people will behave badly, maybe even do things that we regret, because we're in process. We haven't reached the end of the story yet. Yes, much is required of us as Christians, as good neighbors and brothers and sisters in God's family, but it's okay that we're not exactly where we want to be today. And that's frustrating and painful and hard for many of us. But the thing is, we're figuring it out. We might not be in that perfect place all the time, but we get these moments where we get to see a little window into what it's going to be like. Like Luke's little window midway through Jesus' journey from birth to baptism. It wasn't exactly perfect, but there was so much hope for the future. Just like Luke's Jesus, we might not be there yet, but we're on the right track. Next week, we're going to meet Jesus in the water, the Jordan River. So similar and yet so very different than the stream that the boy once played in. Paul said so eloquently in 1 Corinthians 13, "When I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became an adult, I put an end to childish ways." The childhood Tabitha from my favorite TV show would grow up to be a wise witch like her mother Samantha. The childhood Jesus would grow up to be the light of the world. And us? That's the gospel good news. Our story's not over yet. We're still growing up. Amen.